Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. We are here on a Saturday evening after a PLE and another PLE the weekend before. We've watched a lot of wrestling this week, Chris, and including Vader Club for this week. Ken Shamrock versus Vader from In Your House 15, Cold Day in Hell. How are you?
And I'm good. I also did the bonus round of this where I watched the one in Montreal as well. So I've watched a lot of Ken Shamrock and Vader. I got thoughts on that. I'm all right. You know, we're hanging in there. I love whenever WWE runs shows overseas because the events are really good, and it takes me to another land.
This is an ingenious marketing thing that I think doesn't get enough love, mostly because especially if you are wired into social media, you have a lot of, how am I gonna put this, very high profile commentators, and I'm not talking about, say, like Dave. I'm talking about that next level, who just want to rip on WWE for whatever reason they can, and not give flowers where flowers are due. But putting the B pay-per-views in other countries, and especially putting local talent in big positions on those cards, has been nothing but a positive in terms of a viewing experience for these PLEs.
Right, no, it's positive from a viewing experience standpoint. It's
they're under
positive.
3 hours too, which is a phenomenal show for me.
Right, now we just need to bring the pre-show down to 1 hour.
Oh God, yes, the pre-show on this show, because it said, "Hey, Clash at the Castle starting at 9." So Chris and I were thinking, okay, be done by noon. We'll knock out this. Nope. 2 hour pre-show, basically doing all the pre-tapes that they show that for Scotland that they showed during the pay-per-view just in a row, and having Big E and Kevin Owens do, you know, shtick. I appreciate it, but do we need 2 hours for five matches? No, we don't.
No, I don't think so.
Getting to the news, speaking of Clash at the Castle, Chad Gable confirmed a gorilla position that he has re-signed with WWE. And much like other big-name re-signings, goes out and immediately loses his first big title match. Although I did enjoy the match. This was the kind of match that people like you and me probably hate, but certain aspects love the story match, where the story is just overwhelming everything that's in the ring.
I mean, narratively, this is where they were at with that story.
Yeah.
They had to do this. They have to pay off the Otis Maxine thing. They can't keep doing will he or won't he with the Otis thing. So you knew that that was going to be the focal point of the match. There'd been all the telegraphing. It's just like, I just want Chad Gable and Sami Zayn, or Chad Gable and whoever, to just have a serious freaking match where ideally Chad Gable's the babyface. Or if he's going to be a heel, I want him to be a ruthless killer.
There were overtures from AEW in terms of people in AEW who really wanted Chad Gable to jump, i.e. FTR. because they had phenomenal matches, well, with matches them in NXT. With him, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, you figured when push comes to shove, if they're going to back a dump truck full of money to you, I mean, bangers are great, but getting paid is the thing. So, yeah, we'll see. And consequently, it looks like Ricochet has wrestled his last match with WWE. His contract has expired. Got the lawn dart treatment on Monday Night Raw, which was both fun, and I'm just like, I hate the Attitude Era so much because we can't get past it ever again. But yeah, it looks like he's gone, and I would assume he is AEW bound.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Did we talk about this on air last week or off air? Because I my opinion is this, and I'm just going to restate it. He's going to get his one pay-per-view banger with Will Ospreay at the main event. He's going to get the TV match with Ray, probably on a Dynamite. And then he's going to be in that glut of like Top Flight and Action Andretti and Matt Sydal and Commander. And look, they're going to do great high-flying matches. I just don't know. I mean, and this is to the people who go, well, he was misused in WWE. No, I think he was properly used in WWE. I think he hit his ceiling in WWE.
He hit his ceiling in Lucha Underground.
Yes.
But that's only because the entire promotion essentially was written around his shortcomings for an entire season. They knew that their protagonist couldn't talk.
Okay.
So they wrote the entire season of television where everything moved around the silent Legend of Zelda Link style protagonist.
Yes.
And that allowed Ricochet as Prince Puma to be a compelling character. And the bloom went off of the rose the second it was like they did the build up to Prince Puma speaks. And then they didn't have anything good for him to say, and he didn't say it very well.
And they did for a live to tape type of thing, didn't they? It wasn't a pre-tape when he spoke. And to me, Ricochet can talk. You just gotta give him five or six takes to do it, as opposed to doing it live in the arena. And they never.
Well, that was the promo of his life, and it should have been. You know what I mean? Like, that was the most important promo he was ever gonna do, and it should have been better rehearsed.
Yes, I agree there too. There's a lot of, and even, you know, this is across the board in wrestling, and I know this. It's like you give a guy a promo, he goes, I got this. Well, let me hear it first. No, I got it. And then they go out there and they kind of get it. But yeah, I would assume he's either New Japan bound, or at least he's AEW bound with the option to work New Japan, because he really wants to work New Japan. TNA Against All Odds Friday night pay-per-view on their TNA streaming service. Forbidden Door or whatever. There's some portal joke going around that people call it the preventive portal or something like that, whenever you want to talk about WWE doing the same thing. But yes, Tatum Paxley from NXT showed up at Against All Odds, and also the return of Jeff Hardy to TNA. Contract is over with. Hardy. Showed up and probably immediately challenged Sting to a match. Oh, God. Let them reign in hell, then serve in heaven. I still think they're trying to work their way back to WWE for the one last run. But, you know, if they can make a payday there, great. I see nothing in the Hardys. I don't. I haven't in a while. I respect what they've done for the business. Now they both look like shells of their former selves, and Matt's the one with his head on straight, and Jeff's the one everybody wants to see, but he can't go like he used to. It's like watching a band touring, even though they haven't put out any new material in 20 years.
And
they can't play the hits well either now. And
with Hardy's performances, it's like the aging lead guitar player who's yes. arthritic and has also drank away a lot of muscle coordination.
You know what he is? He's the guy who had a really nice high tenor or a tenor slash falsetto voice, and now alcohol means he has to put all the songs like two octaves lower.
Yeah, right. Like, I was thinking it's the aging guitar player, like a Keith Richards or something, where like you don't know what you're gonna get. Like he's gonna go for the same old licks that he's always gone for, but like because of age and deterioration, essentially those Jeff Hardy sentons might crush somebody's rib cage. He might pull them off, or he might kill the guy.
Trademark news: Hikuleo. The other son of Meng, who was in New Japan, has a name. The trademark for WWE, we assume it is for him. Tala Tonga. T-A-L-L-A. A play on his middle name, T-A-U-L-A. But yes, because he's tall, he's going to be Tala Tonga.
Well, you have the Shorta Tonga and the Tala Tonga.
Well, I think my joke was we need like the various like Starbucks sizes. You know, we need Venti Tonga.
Oh no! How about
Grande Tonga?
How about Shorty T?
Shorty T. Oh, we're putting Gable in charge of his creative, and he's his revenge.
That's catchy. That's catchy. You have Shorty Tonga,
Groucho, Harpo, and Chico Tonga. That's what we need. And Zeppo, Solo. No. Following up on a story from last week, Artie Evans has joined the creative team at AEW. And people were asking me about this, and it's one of those weird things where I'm a huge Artie Evans fan from his indie work. He was Mixed Martial Archie. He was Archibald Peck. He was Barrister Robert Evans at some point. Big in Chikara, big in Ring of Honor. And if I were doing a comedy wrestling federation, number one draft pick for me. Now, here's the thing. I can't assume, because everybody was kind of groaning because number one, he used to work for both TNA and WWE, and number two, he was a comedy guy when he was a wrestler. But I'm like, there are people who don't necessarily want to do what they're known for if they get the chance. And so I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt that maybe he wants to do, you know, some you know, solid wrestling type of storylines. I think he's a Jimmy Jacobs pickup, which kind of gives me a bit of a pause there. But, you know, like people were asking me, you know, what do you want to go write at WWE for? I go, because I wanted to write decent wrestling. I didn't want to write comedy sketches necessarily, even though that is my quote unquote bread and butter and my in was comedy writing. I didn't necessarily want to do comedy writing there. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Any thoughts on this whatsoever? I doubt you.
No, I have no thoughts.
Dax Harwood announcing he suffered a serious back injury during the ladder match at Dynasty. Yes, against the Young Bucks, and continued to work on it, and what he called excruciating pain to the point he couldn't sleep. Going to be taking quite a lot of time off, both he and Cash Wheeler as a unit. So that's he had a hematoma on his back. That is one of the grossest things I've ever seen. And it's remarkable because at Double or Nothing, we're sitting at the row where Dax and I believe Matt Jackson were fighting up and down the stairs, and he took a healthy bump tumbling down those concrete stairs. And he was in obvious pain doing just that. So, and you all know me, I love me some FTR. So I hope it's not the end of the career. Let's put it that way. Numbers. AEW Dynamite on June 12th, 681,000 viewers, 0.23 in 18 to 49. NXT June 11th, USA Network, 718,000 viewers, 0.22 in the demo. Dynamite technically wins on a night where NXT loaded it up with Cody Rhodes. Dynamite also was going up against the NBA, I believe, and a soccer match. Do you have
optics
any
are still
thoughts?
Bad.
Do you think so?
I think so. I mean, it's been a multi-week trend of NXT catching up to Dynamite.
Yeah, I'm not there yet, Chris. I'm close, but I'm not there yet. Cause I just, it's one of those things where, but I do find the climb of NXT fascinating. Cause I don't find it necessarily a great show. I find it a good show, and I find some very entertaining parts of it. I'm going to ask something. Is it appealing to a different demo with Trick Williams up at the top versus, say, like a Swerve in AEW where, I mean, look, AEW is still highly Caucasian, if we can say call it that. But, like, Is the cookout coming to NXT, Chris?
Okay, like...
Sorry, was taking so much crap about that this weekend.
Right, no, and I know this is going to be, like, perhaps a hot topic of, like, the discourse, if you will. Like, I could totally see this becoming an online memetic inflection point of counting angels on the head of a pin. But at the end of the day, the cookout demographic in America is, I believe, between 12% and 15% of the U.S. population here. This is not this massive needle mover.
Okay.
And out
of that, the number with cable.
Right. You know, like, it's just, I mean, you're really, if that's what you're looking for, I don't know, man. I don't think that that's borne out by the numbers.
Yeah. I don't know where this growth is coming from. That's the weird thing to me. You know, is it WWE people looking for more WWE product? Is it the fact that these guys aren't known, that they're young and we're getting them, you know, it's kind of like watching minor league baseball in some way. We're going to see them before they're stars.
Let's chalk it up here. I'll give you something. A hotter main show means hotter satellite shows.
Okay.
The Raw and SmackDown is consistently good. They're doing these call-ups of these NXT guys, and I would say to date that this has been one of the stronger waves of call-ups in terms of quality of presentation in a good period of time. So that would be something that would maybe make people who are watching Raw and SmackDown, which is consistently between like 1.7 million-ish for Raw and 2-point-something million-ish for SmackDown. That's, you know, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people who could potentially come and check out NXT. You only need 50,000.
Yeah. And it's an interesting thing, because it's like the knock on it from...
Well, they even do teasers for Tuesday night now.
That's true, too.
You know? I mean, now you actually know what the hell's on it.
They're selling it on Monday for Tuesday, which is a good thing.
And then the crossover talents of Cody Rhodes and stuff. No longer do you feel like NXT is this complete and total afterthought of a television show. Right. And for 4 or 5 years, including during the war, the great wrestling war of 4 years ago, NXT was being presented in this complete afterthought sort of presentation. Never mentioned on Raw. NXT wasn't trying to do anything to get eyes onto it. I mean, there's nothing.
Ken Burns, The Wrestling War, 2024. Dearest mother. No. That'll do it for the news. Now to the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watched, where we had time for, appears we had time for a lot, because this has been a week and a day, and there are two PLEs in here. Do you want to start with Battleground, or do you want to start with Clash at the Castle, Chris?
I think we need to start with Clash at the Castle.
No.
Clash at the Castle.
No bagpipes? Can you do that?
This is traditional European music, Jeffrey.
Okay.
That's okay.
The way I would describe Clash at the Castle is imminently watchable. I mean, that crowd was hot. You had, I thought Bayley and Piper Niven was a pretty strong match. To be honest with you, I thought, I thought the main event was good. I still, the moment that Damian Priest got caught up in the ropes there, all I could think about was how bad off is his ankle right now. But I loved the ending of it. I know it's overbooked mess, but Punk coming out in the ref shirt, the camera angle doing it perfectly.
I thought that came off really great.
It came off great. It did.
And narratively, this show actually did something really, you know, the critique of Battlegrounds is pretty safe. This show, I think, didn't necessarily do bold title changes, but having Drew McIntyre get the obvious and visual win in his home country and then have that stolen by CM Punk. Now, McIntyre is going to be on this righteous crusade, but he's going to be a total asshole about it. Like, it's given this character that much fuel for the fire, right? He got screwed, but Drew's a prick, so he's going to be insufferable about this. But he's also going to have fantastic fodder for this, like storming around back and trying to figure out who gave CM Punk a ref shirt and who let CM Punk come out as an official.
The answer is Jessica Carr, by the way, because they actually filmed that for their Twitter account. They show Punk going, "I need a ref shirt. Jessica, let me have your shirt." let me throw something at you, because it was an interesting idea. Over on the Fight Game Discord, somebody had an interesting idea, and I thought about it. And I go, would it have been more narratively satisfying if Priest if Drew wins, but Punk counted the three for him? And so, in part, Drew has to be thanking Punk for the title win.
I think it works either way, okay. Right? Yeah, I actually think that they wrote this really well, where you could have Punk basically making Drew champion finally, and so then there's still this, like, you know, pregnant cloud over Drew McIntyre's head of, well, CM Punk's going to come back and he's going to want his title shot, saying that I'm the guy who made you champion. And that's going to be fun. But I also think it's just as good to have him come down. And the only problem with that one spot is that since Punk is not actually an official, he didn't actually screw Drew out of anything. And so that's the only thing that made this spot like a little too cute by half. But I'm willing to go with it. I thought the camera coverage on it was excellent.
Yes.
The second you saw the shoes, you knew something was up. Like
the Jordans. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah. They. I mean, that's good. That's good camera work. Like they're thinking about shots now in a way that they didn't think about shots under the Kevin Dunn era.
Oh, I'll push back on that. They thought about those cinematic moments where, like, Vince McMahon peeking over the apron of the thing. They do that from time to time, and especially in main event matches. It's better executed because, and I don't think you get as mad about some of the botches because there's not cut of the Kevin Dunn era. But they did plan out some of those angle type of things, you know, they do, quote unquote, remember, we make movies. So they did think about this from time to time.
Yeah, but, you know, they think about the big scene. And what I like more about Raw and stuff is that it's all the little stuff now that's getting extra touches. It's not the big stuff that's been super enhanced. I would argue it's the backstage segments. It's the little camera coverages of things. I just have enjoyed WWE's product a lot more over the last 12 months.
We talked about Chad and Sammy, but I thought Alba Fire kept that tag match together when it was kind of falling apart here and there. I like Jade and Bianca, and the Road Warriors thing kind of made me laugh, but at the same time, we're doing timing stuff with Jade, who doesn't have good timing. But I thought Alba Fire was solid, and I thought Zoe Stark looked really good in this match too.
Why would you not present the Jade Cargill Bianca Belair thing essentially as like the Authors of Pain or Doom or something like that? Like
Skyscrapers is what I was thinking.
Right, they're doing big dominant sort of methodical spots. And you have, the strategy to me for these type of matches to sort of cover up Cargill, because look, for those of you who have listened to Chris Novembrino talks about Jade Cargill, a popular segment on Shake Them Ropes, you know that Chris has what we could typify as an antagonistic relationship with the professional wrestling of one Jade Cargill. I would consider myself to be a bit of an adversary when it comes to watching her wrestle. And I think there's a way to cover her up, one, by slowing the matches down substantially, two, obviously not using timing moves, three, by making have her do a power move, and, you know, fewer power moves, bigger power moves, and make them look like Murder Death, and then four, that this team is up against cagey heels who are always trying to execute a strategy. And the strategy needs to come close to working, whether it is and a good one, especially if you want to hide Jade Cargill for one of these, is the Alba Fire team decides to go after Jade Cargill's knee. So then it requires Bianca Belair to do most of the work for the match. You know, there's a lot of ways to cover up Jade Cargill, but, and this goes back to this classic segment on our show, you need to cover up Jade Cargill because she's not good and she gets overpresented relative to her level of talent. And whenever she has to just wrestle, it's not good.
WWE fights against this from time to time in their women's division. They want the timing, you know, they lose all history of how they used to present all their giant men. And they decide that all of our giant women need to be these timing. Yeah, they did it with Nia Jax for a while, too. It's like they have to do, you know, all of the various gymnastics stuff, et cetera, et cetera, be able to handle that as opposed to just
that's China's
being a wrestler.
Fault. You know, in a way, they got spoiled by China back in the day. A woman who
I think it's because they refused to do China again in some ways. It's like, well, China was the powerhouse, and nobody was as big a powerhouse as China. So now, Jade Cargill has to do kip ups and timing moves and running splashes and what was the thing that she? Oh, the springboard clothesline.
This is another thing.
On.
You have to pick out moves for these performers that make sense for their body types. Just because you can do a moonsault does not mean that a moonsault is going to have the impressive awe sort of effect. Some body types make a powerbomb look really devastating, and other body types just make a powerbomb look like a move that you get a quick 2 count, but not like a 2.9, but like an actual just 2. So, I mean, especially for Cargill, she's long, she's lean. Flying moves and stuff, they don't look good with her. Like, the limbs don't actually extend. They look very robotic and stiff.
And she doesn't jump well. That's the weird thing is, she was a basketball player, don't get me wrong, but she was a center, I believe, in school. Like, the running splashes, she's just not getting any height on those, and they look awkward at times. Yeah,
she is the perfect person to be doing a massive vertical suplex.
Yes,
right. She has this long, lean body. She has long arms. So, in particular, the arm being extended up looks particularly long, and is also great for stabilizing someone that high in the sky. And then she could just do that. You can get the crowd counting as she's, the 1, 2, 3, do that big thing and then dump them over. I mean, and then that's a good 30-second spot in a match, right? Like, you get them up, the crowd counts for 10 or 15 or whatever. Then you take the back bump, and then Alba Fire sells it like she's disoriented and her back is killing her and shit. And that's 30 seconds right there.
Yeah.
I think there's, I don't think she can ever be amazing, but I guess if you're asking me, could you make Ahmed Johnson presentable if we were taking a time machine? Yeah, sure. I'm not saying that I want to, he's a horrible human being. But Ahmed Johnson is a guy who looked like $1 million. He absolutely looked like a star.
A horrible human being.
Yeah, he did some pretty nasty shit. Like, didn't he do the prostitution stuff?
Oh, what?
Did he? Ahmed's not the hero.
I've long forgotten about Ahmed Johnson and anything he might have done. I mean,
he's not the hero you're looking for, Jeff.
I'm not looking for it. Trust me. I wouldn't look to wrestlers for them.
You got to let this Ahmed Johnson thing go, Jeff.
Cody and AJ was cromulent. I mean, it was good at times, but it's like, dude, we're doing an I quit match and it's a blood feud. It's, I'm going to get hit with a chair. I quit. It's like, oh God, we just saw that with Christian too. I'm just like,
I know. Like, no, don't hit me with the stairs. No. Like,
yeah,
more stairs. I thought that was pretty bad.
When you invoke Magnum and Tully into an I quit match, which Corey Graves did, I want somebody trying to put somebody's eye out with a spike. That's what You know, I mean, because that's what happened in that match, or somebody, you know, that there was the appearance of it. But yeah, this one was just kind of, this is more, I mean, this is very Rock Mankind or Foley I Quit, but without that kind of damage either. I mean,
right. I think you do need handcuffs in an I Quit match, just because you need to have, it's very important, I think, especially when we get to the person quitting, that they're prone, that they basically are defenseless. You know, like if they're not going to be, if they're going to be put into the quit position, it's either going to happen in a submission hold, right? Like you slap on the ankle lock, you slap on the sharpshooter. That's it. We got you tapping out. All right. I quit. That makes sense. Or the other one is I'm handcuffed to the turnbuckles, and I now am just staring at a chair shot and basically infinity chair shots behind that chair shot with no means of escape. It's checkmate.
Or a cage and you have no means of escape.
Right. But essentially you're putting the other person in checkmate. And AJ Styles, all he had to do was roll out of the ropes.
Yeah.
He could have just fallen out of the ring and escaped the stairs.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense to me.
So that was a crap finish. I mean, I didn't hate this feud, but I also think that this, you know, because this obviously was not going to end with AJ winning the title, that this match and his defeat here needed to be much more dramatic,
right,
and more of an inflection point for AJ Styles. And when Cody Rhodes at the end of the match still hits him with the stairs, it makes it almost feel like he's like the cartoon villain who gets like hit by the bottle that got thrown in the air like 2 minutes earlier in the thing, and then he gets balked. He's like, oh. But yeah, like we get that.
Oh, I need to clip that for video, but we'll see. That's a lot of work. Anything else main roster WWE before we move on over to NXT?
Let me see what else happened on Raw here this week. I continue to enjoy all the stuff with the Judgment Day. I think the Judgment Day just continues to be such a great through line for this show, which is what makes me have deep reservations about where does Uncle Howdy and that crap show fit in. Because it's like the Judgment Day is such a solid anchor for this show. They work obviously as the primary heel group, but Priest is likable enough that he has some face components to him. The drama, there's so many different characters here between McDonough and Balor and Carlito. And Dom. Carlito's great. Carlito's awesome.
Carlito is such a sore thumb sticking out of this group. But he's
it's so
there.
Good. I love,
but he's also the voice of reason at all times. It's the weirdest thing. It's like, I think we need more help.
Or the card where like he's like, that's cool. Like that was, that popped me. Like when he just dropped his little tagline.
I actually like the new bloodline. I'm liking this story. I'm liking Paul Heyman being a little bit in over his head with people he can't necessarily control. And Heyman's doing such a great job of selling it. And look, I think the Gorillas of Destiny are doing a good job being Solo Sikoa's red shirts. I think they're, you know, they're menacing enough. They got their own personalities. They're, you know, and they work well with Orton and Owens. So yeah, I watched that go home segment on Friday, and that, you know, they're doing solid work over there. Just so happens it's on a Friday.
Well, I mean, Cody looks like he's going over to Friday here for a bit. I think, you know, I think Cody's reign's going to be more switching back and forth between the two brands.
Yeah.
Based on that Solo Sikoa tease, and then Orton and Owens coming out to make the save on Cody. But, you know, I thought, yeah, Cody stuff perfectly predictable. You know, where are we going next?
Battleground, which, you know, look, the ladder match was over-delivered, in my opinion. But there were no surprises. There was nothing. I mean, I thought Jordan and Roxy had a good match. And you know who over-delivered for me was the OC in that match with Nathan Frazier and A-Kid.
I completely agree.
They looked like they were about 10 years younger than they actually were. I mean, it was a good night for the, because you know who else looks fantastically is Mia Yim.
Yeah.
She is, I mean, she's gotten in great shape. She was solid in that ladder match, and she was solid in the match on Tuesday as well. I mean, she is, she is a rock for that NXT brand. She's very, very good. She fought Parker, Jaden Parker. Is that the name? I can't remember all these names, but
yeah, right.
But I mean, they didn't make a title change for the women, which I thought would have been the most interesting choice. Didn't make a title choice for the men, which would have been an interesting choice. And now what do you do with Ethan Page? Because it's just like he goes in there, he challenges for the title, and then nothing. And then they do that. I'm going to say this, and people are going to expect me, you know, because I don't like Petty. I thought that stupid segment with all the ex-AEW people on NXT on Tuesday night was dumb. It was just dumb as hell. Because it's like, oh, yeah, you're in a good place. You're in the developmental territory of WWE. Okay, great. Cody should know better. He should have struck that. I just hated it. It was stupid.
Yeah, I felt weirdly backhanded, too, of like, it seems like you guys are all in a good place. Like, you're all losers here in the developmental territory.
Yes.
No, real quickly, though, before I get to an NXT, I do need to shout out the incredible match on Raw between Ilya Dragunov and Bron Breakker.
Oh, yeah.
What a fantastic match.
They're great.
But they're both awesome. Ilya Dragunov, I hope more and more people join the Church of Ilya with me here at some point.
I hope management joins the Church of Ilya.
Yeah, no, this guy has been one of the best wrestlers in either company for the better part of 2 years now. He's just outstanding, and every time he goes out there, he crushes it. Even in the lower stakes, just kind of enhancement matches, there's always a fun little wrinkle or two in his matches. And then on the big matches and the long form shit, it's always awesome. And this match with Breakker, I mean, right guy won. Breakker should have won this. I love, and it gave the opportunity for Ilya to get a ton of offense in. And in that offense, he looked awesome. And Breakker looked vulnerable. Breakker does a great job selling. I thought the comeback was really good. This is just an awesome, awesome, awesome match. And now to swing it back to Battleground, right?
Yeah, Battleground. We can go to Tuesday TV because I kind of want to talk about that a little bit because it's like.
I just want to get on the Ethan Page Trick Williams thing. Like, this is what we worried about with Trick Williams going into this match.
Yes,
is that Trick? It is kind of like a Jade Cargill type where you can't really seem to actually squeeze a straight ahead match out of them like that. I think Trick Williams's offense continues to be incoherent. It doesn't make sense. There's no style to it at all. He just throws knees randomly and like does other jumpy stuff occasionally. But there's no style to his fighting. Ethan Page, the matches that he wasn't driving the car on, were always draggy, and the wrong guy won. I'm with you. Page should have won this.
Yeah.
Page should have absolutely screwed him. Like that, Trick Williams had no chance to prepare for this. Page also has some tricks ready for the match. And I mean, even if you want to launch that little Loserville faction that they launched on Tuesday night, you have Loserville come out.
You can't do that. You can't do them as a faction. Those guys, because then it becomes an invasion NWO angle. No.
Well, what does Ethan Page have now?
Nothing.
Right. So all these guys is stupid invasion crap.
Oh God, no! Please don't. But no, go ahead. You're gonna make a point about this if you're gonna do it.
Right. You should have belted Ethan Page because there's nothing to do with him now. And Trick Williams is also a dead well. This is a dry well. There's nothing there anymore.
Yeah, because we've also kind of pulled the plug on the Lash Legend romance story, or even with both of them as champions. I mean, all the interesting stories are kind of gone for this, and now I think we're getting. I mean, is Ethan Page now going to raise the stakes to try and get the title? I mean, we've already seen him lose. I don't see where you go from there. But speaking of which, why did Wesley and Javon Davis both lose to guys they shouldn't be losing to on Tuesday, Chris? Wesley eats a clothesline from Joe Coffey, and then Javon Davis losing to freaking Sean Spears. And look, I like Sean Spears a lot, but are we building Spears up for Trick Williams?
Well, no, apparently we're breaking Javon Davis and we're going to make him like evil under Sean Spears' mold or something.
Oh, no.
That was what the little backstage thing is. Joe Coffey has become, both the Coffey brothers have leveled down at least a whole 1 out of 10 since like 2 years ago. Like, they, you know, 2 years ago, they might have been 6.5 out of 10, 7 out of 10s. They are now sixes or 5.5s. We'll call them gentlemen sixes at this point in terms of interest, matches. They're boring as all get out.
They're boring. And they were much more interesting in NXT UK when they were.
They were. They weren't bad in NXT UK. And like Joe Coffey once had this aura that said main event-ish. And he doesn't have that at all at this point.
I actually thought they were going to get them involved in this main event at Clash at the Castle since they're Scottish, and it didn't happen. I was like a little surprised by that, you know, to counteract the Judgment Day or something like that. What was good on NXT for me, at least, women's character work. JC Jane, nice little segment there with Cody. Thea Hale, just Thea being Thea in that Chase U segment. And then Wendy Chu returning. I am pro Wendy Chu. Don't know if I'm pro spooky Wendy Chu, but I'm pro Wendy Chu, and I'm gonna give it a couple weeks before I say that this thing's dead.
Yeah, right. I gotta say, I do like that the new finisher's the sleeper. Makes all the sense in the world.
Chris just deconstructs it to its bare facts. Yes, her finisher should be the sleeper. And no, that's a perfect. That's a perfect point that I hadn't even thought about.
No, that is her finisher. I like that the match ends with like making your opponent take a nap now.
No, I wasn't making fun of you. I was just going, God, that's so right there in your face, and I didn't even see it. You're right about that.
No, it's good.
Let's move to AEW. What do you want to talk about there?
AEW, what do you want to talk about? Okay, I really enjoyed the Mark Briscoe, Kyle O'Reilly, Orange Cassidy segment backstage.
Yes.
It wasn't good, but it was entertaining.
It right? had like, good in it, and it was...
Mark was good, but Kyle O'Reilly sucks. His energy's so strange.
No, it's terrible, but... No, to me, and here's how I put it on Wednesday when I was analyzing it. It's like they decided to do this segment live, I think. And Mark Briscoe had a 45-second promo in him, and they made him go 60 seconds. So at some point, it's just like, all right, I finished what I had to say, and now I got to double back and extend for 15 seconds.
That's because we them boys. You don't understand. We know all of those things.
Briscoe is a godsend, and I love him to death, and I want him to have all the things. And he was... Again, he's the most exciting promo in AEW because nobody knows what the heck he's ever going to say. So I loved this part of it, but watching them try to keep it together. And the thing, I hated Orange Cassidy's reaction. It's kind of like, if you're going to do this, don't make him bring down the promo. Make him do something low energy where it's just like, how are you feeling? Oh, I'm terrible. It's like, instead, he should be fired up. He should be doing the anti-fired up thing by Mark Briscoe. Yeah. Yeah, let's rock or something like that.
No, it would have been good. Yeah, like to kind of like pick up that narrative sort of flow, but in the Orange Cassidy level of energy. Like,
yes,
yeah, we're gonna go out there and we're absolutely going to rock their world. We're gonna go out there. You don't understand, Renee. We're gonna absolutely annihilate them.
We're on the same page on this. Yeah, it's like let's go kick their ass. You know, something like that. You know, and let's do it that way. I really liked Mercedes and Zeuxis. I had forgotten I had seen Zeuxis before. She was actually in the second year of the Mae Young Invitational, and she fought the person who would be known as Big Swole first round, and then eventually lost to Io Shirai. But I thought this was, I compared this to kind of like a Vader Sting match where Mercedes was Sting and Zeuxis was kind of a Vader. It was kind of a, I mean, she was playing a monster heel, to Mercedes here. Mercedes working from underneath most of that time, and I thought they worked very, very well together. I really did.
You gotta build these people though.
They said, oh, she's the tag partner of Stephanie Vaquer. Yeah,
especially
video package. Need a video package.
You need to build a monster to slay a monster. Like, this is old wrestling tropes, but
2 weeks of music videos before we do this match.
Yeah, I mean, music videos, even she comes out and has an enhancement match the week prior where she's playing with her food the entire time.
Yes.
But yeah, like, and it's someone who looks kind of like Mercedes Moné, so that you've actually got like, oh, Mercedes might be in trouble here. Like, you know, that kind of thing. You need to really establish a monster as a monster. That gets back to kind of a sustaining critique of AEW. Love the match. Match is good. And I'm with you. I thought that this was one of the stronger moments on Dynamite here. My next topic is Chris Daniels sucks.
Like, he is chewing some scenery on these pre-tapes. So, like, he starts in profile and then he turns to the camera. Hey, AEW fans. I'm just like, what are we doing? I don't like
everything. Like, everything about this, from him showing up at the start of the show to the way the way he did that. He's supposed to be a figure we like.
Yes.
He's the ambassador of Tony Khan. So interrupting the Young Bucks and the AEW, the Elite guys, and Prince Nana and all that stuff, and sending them all away so that they don't fight right now is not what the Tony Khan wing of the show would want, right?
Right.
Like, this is not Adam Pearce, where he has a job to the company of managing the show and
I think it is exactly Adam Pearce is what he's actually in execution doing.
No, he's not supposed to be though. That's the problem. He is basically doing a crappier version of Adam Pearce, but in a role that actually should be, though it seems like it should be similar on the superficial level, underneath it, if you actually care about the meta storyline of the power struggle for the soul of AEW, I'm supposed to give a shit about it, so you are. Like, you need to have Chris Daniels actively trying to do things to sabotage the Elite.
Yes.
And or like, he's still trying to be the good GM.
Or he's righting the wrongs of the Young Bucks as they're trying to do. Yes. No, I agree with that. There was a lot tonally incorrect about that first segment. And also just the Jack Perry Dustin Rhodes match, where it's like, I get that Dustin wants to bleed. And I think he wants to bleed to get Jack Perry over. But you need Jack Perry to be a bastard and make that dude bleed, as opposed to, oh, there's a turnbuckle pad off and he hit his head on it. No, Jack Perry should be trying to put Dustin Rhodes out of wrestling, because we are pumping up this blood and guts match for the next month and a half or whatever it is. And we need to make Jack Perry a killer here. We need to get him a little bit off center. And I just, this match just did not do anything for me that I think they wanted to do for it. They wanted Jack Perry to seem like he was the baddest dude around after this match. I go, no, it's just Dustin likes to bleed. That's all.
No, and that was because the setup here is that Chris Daniels essentially ambushes Jack Perry into a match. This is a bad showcase for that too. I mean, if you're going to do that, it needs to be extremely one-sided and relatively short, where Jack Perry just basically toys with Dustin Rhodes for about 5 minutes and kind of goes, this is your hero. And then, you know, like, then basically he should have a finishing move called the Future Endeavors or something like that, where, because what the Elite needs to be doing at this point, and they sort of even tease us, oh, we've got rid of half the locker room. Essentially the Bucks need to be on a mission to get rid of all of the old talent or whatever.
Like, if you lose, you're fired or whatever. And have that as a stip for every single match for every single person. And then it's like all these people are fired. And then when they make their grand comeback, everybody can be happy to see them. No, I agree with you completely on that one.
Yeah.
I love the Roosh squash though. Roosh is such a throwback to studio wrestling where guys were, all I could think of is Ron Garvin, 1985, just messing with an enhancement kid and putting him in sugar holds and making him in pain. Roosh killed this guy, and I loved every minute of it. And then I liked the brawl with MJF. I thought that was very, very good. Let me throw this to you. What did you think of Swerve and Ospreay?
I mean, I think the promo stuff is, it's not there for me.
I thought Ospreay came off too cocky. Like, it's one of those things where it's like he came off heelish against Swerve. I'm just like, no, that's not the way to do this type
of thing. But, like, I don't, again, they've been non-committal about turning Ospreay face, and they've been non-committal about turning Swerve face. And so, you know, now you have these two guys. They don't really have a reason to not like each other right now, too, which always makes it not interesting. You know, you're trying to sell the dream match. And then there's, like, this extant question of, like, why are we worried about the dream match right now when we clearly have this problem of the Young Bucks and the Elite that obviously Swerve's acutely aware of as a character? And like, it's just,
although they're not really doing anything with them either. The Bucks are supposedly, you know, oh, there's so much havoc here in AEW. It's like, really? I'm not noticing that at all. It's just a normal TV show just with the Bucks on it.
Yeah.
Right. I will point you to something. I don't have any other notes for Dynamite, but I did watch some of Collision before we went on the air. Your girl Thunder Rosa and Deonna Purrazzo had a hell of a no DQ match. Thunder Rosa came out with the knee pads over jeans, so you knew it was going to be a good night, although she lost. But Deonna gave her own, too. Like, again, my women's hardcore division in AEW is strong and fun. That match was fun. And then the other thing, unrepentantly stupid, but I loved it. Dalton Castle has a new set of boys, and it's the Outrunners. And they're just doing the, you know, the Macho Man pose with the tongues out, spinning around. It is so unrepentantly stupid, and I loved every moment of it. Do you have any other AEW thoughts for the week?
I don't. We talked about the Dynamite show, and we're like, this is a pretty
good one. I actually
thought
the Dynamite, like, the party match was good. It wasn't a bad Dynamite, to be honest with you. I thought.
I've now talked myself, okay, the wrestling was fine, but I once again have talked myself out of this being a good show, because I don't know that this really helped. It didn't help Universe build again this week. And to me, for Dynamite, a week of not universe building is a week lost, and this formula of just go out there and have a damn good match gets them to 680,000 viewers. I don't know. I guess I'm still wanting a little something different. Commit to the stories that you're telling.
Yes. I want more.
I want
tell
more
your stories
commitment.
Harder. Tell a bit. You know, yeah. Show us more. Don't tell us. Show us more.
This is the Bucks Hostile Takeover. You guys should be more concerned about the story beats about this than I am. You know, I should be able to just follow this along, you know, and not be kind of in the air on this shit. You know, I'm not in the air on what is happening with the D'Angelo family. It's not good, but I know what's happening.
And the No Quarter Catch crew.
Boy, good old Charlie Dempsey with his capiche.
The death jokes. Oh, they're so funny. But this was your week for Vader Club. Why don't you guide us through it?
Oh, boy. So I picked a guy who I was always a big fan of in Vader Club this week, in Ken Shamrock. Oh,
I thought you were going to say Invader. It's like, we have the new Vader.
Yeah,
Let me reset here. Vader Club does not necessarily mean that we're going to do a Vader match every week.
No.
This was originally the Hose Me Club, but Chris didn't like that name. I kind of agree with that, but it's just whatever kind of titillated us from the past that we wanted to watch this week. We'll give each other a match every week, and I'll try and do my best to update the Twitter account with the match as early as possible, and also the Discord, the Voices of Wrestling Discord, Shake Them Ropes channel, to let you guys know so you can watch it beforehand. But yes, so that is what Vader Club is. We just happen to have a Vader match this week, but Chris really likes Ken Shamrock, and Chris can now continue.
Yeah, so Ken Shamrock is a guy who, when he came into WWF, just immediately captured my attention. The Ken Shamrock snap spots, they always did a really good job kind of getting that over with him doing belly to backs to every single referee and every single security guard under the sun, you know, 50 plus people, that sort of thing. They made him look really legit. And part of what got him over as very legit was a lot of these sort of kind of work shooty matches that they did early on. His first one here is against Vader, and he has a number of matches with Vader, not just here in WWF, but also abroad. There's like a cage match that happens shortly after this. I think it's for New Japan. I watched it several years ago. There's like a, kind of like a, I think they have like a Lion's Den match sort of thing too at one point. But this is not that. This is his first match in WWF, where it is submissions or knockouts only against Vader. And this match is very much, I think, emblematic of what Vader Club is, in the sense that this match is about really stiff shots. And it's not stiff shots in the strong style, we stand in the middle of the ring sort of stiff shots. It's guys trying to guard them and just having to take them. Like, the shot still hurts even though they're trying to guard it like a rational human being. And for me, that stuff is always really good. Ken Shamrock, too, at this point, and really for the first several years of WWF, has just an incredible gladiator's physique. Like, the A-frame on his upper torso is just insane. The back muscles, his back muscles are, like, bonkers. So him squaring up against Vader, though it is the smaller guy against the bigger guy, you actually feel like the smaller guy has a credible shot. And that's gotten over, I think, really effectively in this match. I always love Vader's corner work in all of his matches, but Ken Shamrock's a guy who can get as good as he gives. And so Vader can really waylay into Ken Shamrock in the corner, and does. And Ken Shamrock can really waylay into Vader, and does. And that makes all of this match really satisfying. So that's why I picked out this match. I wanted to spotlight Shamrock because I think Shamrock's a guy that they, I think at one point, if memory serves, were at least kicking the tires and to some degree of putting the belt on. They even did the one Raw. They did the one Raw where he like gets like dusty finished on the title and then just ends up like suplexing everybody under the sun. I think he taps out Rock, or is it Michaels who he taps out? But he taps out someone big. He gets, you know, a visual victory at the main event of a Raw against someone pretty big right in the height of the Monday Night Wars. But they never went all the way with him, unfortunately.
It was either Rock or Big Show, I think. I can't remember.
No, I think it was Michaels. It was either Michaels? Rock or Michaels. Okay. Yeah.
I was early into Ken Shamrock because I watched some of those first few Ultimate Fighting Championships when it was basically what John McCain would later call human cockfighting. You know, where it's like there were no weight classes. They'd get people of various sizes and shapes and disciplines and stuff and see who, okay, let's just see. We're going to have a one-night tournament. Let's see who the better guy is. And, you know, we'll just let them fight. I mean, they weren't even timed rounds, I think. I think it was just one of those things where it's like you fight until a finish type of a thing.
I rented some of those when I was a young pup back in the day. And I want to say they were like 25 minutes or something like that. Because yes. I watched the Severn Shamrock ones. And that's, boy, if you like a Timothy Thatcher match from like 8 years ago, 9 years ago, you will effing love UFC 2 and 3, my friend.
I apologize because I was going to do some research in the Observer about this match, because I am almost dead certain that Vince McMahon sent Vader in there to rough up Ken Shamrock. I can't prove that. I can't say that, but there's a short arm clothesline in this match that absolutely rocks Ken Shamrock's world.
I don't know. Like Vader's recounting of that sequence, because I do remember this, it tracks with what I saw on the tape, which is that Shamrock was doing his fire up, fire back. Like he was, you know, this is the part where he breaks down Vader and gets the dub. He is doing that with a lot of works, kicks and punches that from Shamrock probably were all stiff as shit. And He definitely broke Vader's nose during the course of this match.
Yes.
And so I think he stiffed Vader one too many times, and Vader just finally, because it's not even a short arm clothesline. It is just a meat hook. It's a clothesline.
It's a sickle. It's like a sickle. Russian sickle.
Yeah. It's a Russian sickle. Yeah. No, he just absolutely hangs this guy's neck on that thing. And Shamrock with the lights out manages to still get to the finish, which is hilarious. But, I mean, Vader absolutely lights out this guy during the end of this match.
Yeah. And Vader, man, Vader wasn't having fun in this match either. I mean, he's getting kicked all over the place and he's hating that. It felt like Shamrock put a little bit too much on an arm bar or something at some point too. And Vader was just like, God, what am I doing in this match? I mean, Vader's screaming spots across the ring. I mean, there's some communication issues here. It's a fun mess is what I would call this match. And it's brutal. That's the other description I'd have. This match is brutal, even if it's not like gallons of blood type of stuff. I mean, these guys are just potatoing each other all over the place.
And let's not forget about the vertical suplex to the outside on Ken Shamrock, where Shamrock's just taking that on those little crap mats that they have back in those
days.
It
looked like he blew up both his knees on that one.
And then Vader, you know, goes outside and kind of continues the onslaught. And Vader does an incredible moonsault in this match. The moonsault looks great. Shamrock does not get all the way out of the way. And that doesn't get called very well by commentary. Like Shamrock should have, he took a headbutt. He should have at least sold it as a headbutt and then began his fire up.
Yeah. You know? If you want to watch this match, it's, from In Your House, 1997, Cold Day in Hell, I believe is the name of it. It's season 3, episode 3. For those of you with the Peacock, in case you want to look, it's not the one from Canada.
No, although that one I have also watched as part of my research for this episode here, and I thought that match was, it's nowhere near as entertaining as this one because this one's a little bit more chaotic, and there's a realism in the chaos which makes the match just naturally sort of compelling. Like Shamrock and Vader are legitimately lighting each other's asses up here a little bit, and that's fun. However, I will also say the Montreal one, minus the British Bulldog insertion towards the end of it, is pretty entertaining in its own right. It features a brutal in any era powerbomb to the outside where Ken Shamrock takes it off of the apron. It's an apron powerbomb from the ring to the outside. Lest you think that the work has gotten crazier in these days. No, guys actually used to do really crazy shit back in the day, too. It's just when that would happen, then there'd be a 30-second downbeat after that. Because Vader dumps Shamrock, same thing with the suplex. He dumps Shamrock out there. That is sold as it meant something.
It's ended there. It's been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me at CrapGame13 on Elon Musk's X. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. Follow Chris only on his only socials at @DOCTOR_NOV at Instagram.com. This has been, again, Shake Them Ropes. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, podcast for all your various wrestling loves. Be back next week after Jeff gets back from Vegas and playing in the World Series of Poker. We'll see how that goes. But yes, I also do a show over on Fight Game Media. It's called The Dynamite Show. Myself and Paul Ace Fontaine go live on YouTube about 20 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air, drops into your podcatchers the next morning. We thoroughly deconstruct that night's Dynamite and any news that's surrounding AEW. Chris has other interests of various colors. He'll tell you about it now.
Are you interested in learning the native music of Scotland? You too can learn to play Scottish guitar like your old pal Novi, the co-host of Voices of Wrestling's second favorite show, Shake Them Ropes. So if you're interested in learning how to do Scottish music like this, follow me on Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV. and let the spirit of Scotland flow through you. No, I'm not done yet. I'm not done yet. Now I'm done.
We're a good distant third or fourth on voices.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.